This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The multi-layered crisis is triggered by a deterioration in security that has led to displacement within countries and across borders, rising hunger, inequality, and the direct and indirect consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic, including a reported rise in gender-based violence.
That's the spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs on the growing crisis in the Sahel region. Details coming up also. Medical staff in Cameroon want additional security at hospitals following a series of COVID-19 related attacks. And the alleged financier of Rwanda's 1994 genocide, on the run for 26 years, has been arrested in Paris. All these and more next on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The United Nations and private aid agencies are warning that an unprecedented number of people in Africa's volatile Sahel region are in desperate need of life-saving assistance and protection. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Aid agencies say they are alarmed but not surprised by the extent of the humanitarian crisis gripping the Sahel. Years of conflict in half a dozen countries, terrorist attacks, climate change causing food insecurity, and now the COVID-19 pandemic have stripped the population of its ability to protect and provide for itself. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports 24 million people, or one in five of the Sahel's total population of 120 million, need international assistance and protection to survive. This is the highest number ever recorded. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says children account for half of those affected.
The multi-layered crisis is triggered by a deterioration in security that has led to displacement within countries and across borders, rising hunger, inequality, and the direct and indirect consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic, including a reported rise in gender-based violence.
The UN reports escalating conflict and instability in Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, northeast Nigeria, Chad, and northern Cameroon have displaced 4.5 million people in the region, both internally and as refugees. It notes 12 million people are short of food, with many on the brink of starvation, and 1.6 million children are severely malnourished. Aid agencies warn the lean season between June and August, when food stocks are exhausted, will worsen the situation. Another flashpoint is the growing number of coronavirus cases in the region, currently at more than 9,000. The United Nations has appealed for $2.8 billion to reach 17 million people in need. So far, only 18% of the funds has been received. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic in the Sahel, the UN requested an additional $638 million earlier this month. Aid agencies say failure to support emergency operations in the Sahel will cost many more lives and devastate communities. They warn this humanitarian crisis could spill into new regions and into West African coastal countries if life-saving needs are ignored. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Lesotho, the Council of State has ordered Prime Minister Dr. Thomas Tabane to step down today. The 80-year-old faces possible prosecution over the killing of his ex-wife. They were going through a bitter divorce when she was fatally shot outside her home 2 days before Tabane's 2017 inauguration. A new prime minister is scheduled to be sworn in tomorrow. His finance minister, Dr. Mokesi Majoro, and his deputy will be Matibela Mokotu. Majoro, who attained his PhD at the Washington State University, worked for the IMF as an executive director from 2010 to 2012 in Washington, D.C. He's also a parliamentarian from the ruling All Basotho Congress, ABC, representing the Tetsen constituency. Panic has gripped several hundred people after a popular Cameroon pastor and candidate in the Central African state's last presidential election, Franklin Ndifor, died of COVID-19 following his prayers that hundreds of his supporters be cured of the coronavirus. Police used force to gain access to his residence in the economic capital city of Douala, as some of his supporters blocked entrances, praying for his resurrection. Mokedun Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of followers sang Sunday morning at Ndifor's Douala residence that the man popularly referred to as the prophet is not dead, but he is rather on a spiritual retreat with God and will return soon. Their singing and prayers were broadcast by several local radio stations. Ndifor died and was buried in front of his residence Saturday by workers of Cameroon's COVID-19 response team in Douala. Dr. Gael Nanga said by messaging application from Douala that Ndifor died less than a week after being diagnosed with COVID-19. He says that some members of Ndifor's Kingship International Ministries Church called him to come to the pastor's aid when they found out Ndifor was in agony, and that when the medical team he leads arrived, Ndifor was having severe respiratory difficulties. He says the pastor died less than 10 minutes after they treated him. The governor of Cameroon's coastal region where Douala is said in a release he deployed police to force their way to Ndifor's residence when his followers chased medical staff away, claiming that the pastor was on a spiritual retreat with God rather than dead and should not be buried. Ndifor follower Rigobertche says the prophet last Wednesday prayed for him and several dozen people diagnosed with COVID-19 and some who suspected they were carriers or had symptoms. He says via a messaging application that Ndifor's death has brought panic to the hundreds of people who have been visiting him for prayers for a divine cure.
This is a pastor that has been laying hands and claims that he cured COVID-19. If you, the person that claims that you are curing COVID-19, you are dead, what about the fellow people that were affected by the COVID-19? Now that he's dead, I don't know how the people he was laying hands on will believe.
Medical staff are asking all those who came in contact with the pastor to report to hospitals to be tested for COVID-19. Besides praying for COVID-19 patients at his home and his church, Ndifor was also donating buckets and soap to the poor to protect themselves from the coronavirus by washing their hands. His last public outing was on April 20 when he went out into Douala's streets to distribute face masks. Ndifor had a reputation as a miracle healer, and he was a contender in Cameroon's 2018 presidential election, emerging seventh out of nine candidates with 23,687 votes. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
84-year-old Felicien Kabuga, long wanted as the alleged financier of Rwanda's 1994 genocide, has been arrested in Paris, where neighbors described him as a sickly man who never said a word to them. Described by police as one of the world's most wanted men, Kabuga has been on the run for 26 years. He is wanted on 7 counts of genocide and crimes against humanity, filed in 1997 by the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. That tribunal shut down 5 years ago, and the charges against Kabuga likely will be transferred to the International Residual Mechanism for Criminal Tribunals at The Hague. The search of Kabuga has been likened to the transnational pursuit of Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann, who was captured in Buenos Aires in 1960. The Hutu businessman is accused of creating and making contributions to a fund that raised finances to pay the youth militias that slaughtered some 800,000 Tutsi and moderate Hutus. Survivor groups of the genocide hailed his arrest. Zimbabwe's leader has extended a lockdown to contain COVID-19, which has officially infected 42 people in the poverty-stricken nation. Public health experts say the extension is the right move, but as Columbus Mavunga in Harare reports, jobless informal workers are asking the government to pay them.
In a televised address, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said he's worried by increasing cases of local transmission of the coronavirus in Zimbabwe, and the country is not yet in a position to lift the lockdown.
Zimbabwe will therefore continue on the level 2 lockdown for an indefinite period. We shall have regular 2-week interval reviews to assess progress or lack of it. This should give us more time to strengthen the prevention and case management approaches for the various risk populations. Social and physical distancing will continue to be maintained and enforced at all times. I appeal to our people to exercise greater self-discipline in this regard. Our individual and collective roles in the fight against this pandemic can never be overemphasized.
The United Nations says Zimbabwe is facing a plethora of humanitarian problems, such as recurring droughts, food insecurity, and a collapsing economy, and needs international assistance. One of those feeling the pinch is 28-year-old Trevor River, who sells building materials in one of Harare's poor townships. He wants the government to pay him as long as there is a lockdown and he can't work.
The lockdown is quite difficult, and the impact that we are facing right now, it's quite huge, because we are no longer selling. It's like the source of our income has been cut short. So it's quite difficult for us to survive.
Earlier this week, police arrested some members of the political opposition who participated in a demonstration demanding the government pay those who can't earn a living because of the coronavirus lockdown. Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights head Fortune Yamande says the country is too far from ready to lift its lockdown. He said he sympathizes, though, with the unemployed. We have had no source of income since late March, when restrictions were imposed.
The WHO specifies that for a country to lift a lockdown, it should not have widespread community transmission. It must have conducted adequate testing so that it can reflect on the true extent of the disease. The health system should be well equipped to respond to any surge in cases of COVID. Then finally, the government should have the capacity to test, isolate, and trace all the contacts of those who test positive for COVID-19. So, basing on this criteria, we still think that there's a lot that needs to be done. But however, extending the lockdown without addressing to these four fundamental issues raised by the WHO is futile.
Some informal traders are not waiting for the government to pay them. They are defying the lockdown and flooding the streets of Harare, selling their wares to make money. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Most sex workers in Zimbabwe are in a difficult situation during the COVID-19 lockdown, which has brought a significant drop in their clientele. Reporter Kudza Zanwashi has the details.
Debra Mwase is a programs manager with Katwe Sisterhood, a local women's organization pushing for sexual and reproductive health and rights. They work hand in glove with sex workers in Zimbabwe.
Sex workers are quite affected by the lockdown. Most of them, their trade depends on actually physical contact with their clients, and also their trade depends on the movement of people, where they get most of their clients as people who move around.
Mwase says challenges faced by sex workers are widespread.
Because most of them come from impoverished backgrounds and they do not have savings and are actually selling sex in order to survive. The one thing that they've been complaining about has been the issue around food, that they've not been able to get access to food. The other issue as well is the issue of rentals, because most of them live in rented accommodation.
She says, despite a government declaration that rentals could be paid post-lockdown, sex workers still risk eviction. Sex work in Zimbabwe is criminalized, so a property owner could argue that a tenant was turning their property into a brothel. Most countries in Southern Africa are on lockdown with their borders closed to most businesses, serving long-distance trucks. The drivers have been known to be a huge client base for sex workers. Mwase says most sex workers also have underlying conditions which compromise their ability to fight the virus if they contract it. Critics say handshakes and other human physical contact may drastically change because of the COVID-19 outbreak. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashi from Harare.
The evacuation of Almajiris from Nigeria's northern states has been a source of worry as the country battles the coronavirus. Gifta Gariga from Abuja, Nigeria, reports that most of these children already have tested positive for COVID-19.
Almajiris are supposed to be learning Islamic studies while living with their teachers. Most, however, end up begging and scavenging on the streets. They constitute a large number of Nigerians, more than 10 million children who are out of school. The 19 northern state governors recently reached an agreement to put an end to the Almajiri system of education as part of efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19. For a long time, issues have been raised to change the system to no avail. The governors also agreed to evacuate the Almajiris back to their states of origin. There are fears that the evacuation at this time would increase the exposure to the disease. Authorities suspect they are a source of fresh COVID-19 infections, as most have tested positive for the virus. Hafsat Baba is the Commissioner for Human Services and Social Development in Kaduna State, where some of the Almajiris were moved. She says the ban by the northern governors on Almajiris was welcome.
It has been long overdue. We have been agitating for this. And for Kaduna State to start, the others are following. We are going to make sure that we put a system in place where this Almajiri issue will not surface again.
Baba noted that the Almajiris sent to Kaduna from Kano State have all been tested for COVID-19.
The first batch of the Almajiris that we got from Kano, those were the ones that actually went tested. About 60 of them tested positive, because we received about 160.
A majority of Almajiris have been living in Kano, another northern state. It is also where the evacuation of Almajiris began. The Commissioner for Information of the State, Malam Mohammed Garuba, said procedures are being set up for the children to move.
Generally, it was agreed that since we have these Almajiris across the northern state, there is need for them to come over. The state government will make arrangements, screen them, and then bring them back to their respective states.
But human rights activist Olukayode Ajulo expressed dissatisfaction with the forced movement at this point, saying the evacuation portends grave risk in the spread of the virus across the country.
It shouldn't be. This is what we are saying. Almajiri to start with, they are Nigerian and they continue to be Nigerian unless we prove otherwise. And if they are not Nigerian, so you don't need to move them to any other state. That one alone is like you are distributing the COVID-19 more than what you have done.
Ajulu called the evacuation illegal and unconstitutional. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
While the coronavirus has forced schools globally to switch to online learning, in developing countries like Nigeria, millions of children without remote learning access have been left behind. 40% of Nigerians live on less than $1 a day, and only 1 in 4 have internet access. Ifeo Ketong looks at how families are trying to cope in this report from Jos, Nigeria.
Seated under a pine tree, On a sunny afternoon, 13-year-old Charity, Yakubu's older sister, Susan, is playing the role of teacher as she takes Charity through lessons she would have been learning in school. This has been their routine since March, when the coronavirus pandemic led Nigeria to close schools.
I feel very sad because I don't get to learn new things. All the things I've learned, I've forgotten them. So I want government to help us. By God's grace, let this coronavirus pandemic finish so that everyone can get to go back to school.
Nigeria's National Bureau of Statistics says only 1 in 4 Nigerians have internet access, but 3 out of 4 have mobile phones. Nigerian educators like Bala Babangida, the principal of the Unique Schools in Jos, says that while some Nigerians have been able to switch to online and social media learning, there are challenges.
Looking at the cost of data and even the devices to use for effective learning, it is a bit problematic to Nigerians. So I think if the government can do something about it, it will go a long way to help to put a balance between the rich and the poor.
With 40% of Nigerians living on less than $1 a day, the added cost makes remote learning for the vast majority out of reach. Veronica Yuba has her 10-year-old daughter with her at her vegetable stall to help with the sales. Ayuba says she would rather have a daughter at home learning her schoolwork, but she's unable to help. Ayuba points out that authorities are saying parents should begin to teach children at home, but she says she doesn't know how to read and she doesn't know where to start. Making matters worse, the restrictions brought on by COVID-19 have cost many their jobs, including Yakubu's mother, Salome, a domestic housemaid. There's no money, Salome says, including money for food. She wonders where they can find the money to buy a good phone so they can learn on the internet. To help bridge the education gap, Nigeria is broadcasting lessons on state-run television and radio stations while children wait for the pandemic to ease up enough to allow schools to reopen. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyu Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.